This is The Fourth Estate on RCR Reality Check Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Reality Check Radio, and we're ready to get into summer. Friday, November the 29th, and I'm your host, Marty Gibson, and this is The Fourth Estate, where we cast an eye over New Zealand and the world's media. And we've got plenty to talk about this morning, and joining me to cover off a myriad of topics, Rachel Stewart, first Kiwi woman to work as a train driver, a keen falconer, an ex-New Zealand Herald columnist, where she won the 2016 Opinion Writer of the Year at the Canon Media Awards. These days, she's more occupied with keeping freezers topped up with venison, and she writes at Writing Shotgun on Substack. Good morning, Rachel.
Morning, Marty. How are you, mate?
I'm all right. I'll pull through. And Annie O'Brien comes from a digital marketing background. She's been heavily involved in women's rights advocacy and is a founding council member of the Free Speech Union. You can find her prolific and often very entertaining political and media commentary on X. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning.
So pleased to have you here. I've been looking forward to having a chat with you.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. And I hope you're prepared for some very critical comments on our media.
Yeah, no, well, that's the idea. So first up, let's get right into it. The first COVID inquiry phase one has dropped, and we're seeing some faint signs of contrition from the media. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they're going to walk back from those heady days of take the shot, win the prize, take the shot. In Stuff's What You Need to Know summary of the report, it says it found targeted mandates were appropriate, but widespread orders caused public distrust. The inquiry set up by the previous Labor government was tasked with looking at how the health system coped, the lockdowns, the vaccine mandates, and the economic response. The entire report is more than 700 pages and the first of two reports expected from a Royal Commission into the COVID-19 response. It said, apparently, it used the phrase misinformation 39 times, but never got around to saying what the misinformation was. So, Annie, have you have you read the 700-page report yet?
Look, I have to admit, I haven't trawled the 700 pages. I've had a look at kind of the summaries that are around, and I am pleased to see that there is acknowledgement of some of these, I think, quite significant failings. However, it's just classic that today I open up the online version of the news platforms, looked at Herald and Stuff, and there's nothing. Just not talking about it. So there was a few articles yesterday. You think about the wall-to-wall coverage that we had, often operating as the propaganda wing for the government, where everything was COVID, everything. And now when we have this important review and we have some really important reflections on how things were handled, it seems the media is giving as little room for it as possible, and they're hoping to move on quickly. I personally think that they have a lot to reflect on in terms of their role, especially in the distrust in them and in the government, and the disruption to social cohesion. You know, at the moment we've got other issues with social cohesion going on in the country, but I think that our reserves were weakened already because of what had happened with COVID and because we were pitted against each other. And that hasn't helped when other issues of division or disagreement come up.
I mean, I feel my loss of social cohesion just reading this stuff, because it speaks to your worldview. If the report seems to be written from the perspective of, well, they did their best, you know, but you know, I mean, they could have tweaked a few things and we're going to need to for the next pandemic. I'm more interested in a report that's written from the perspective of, hey, they war gamed this to 21 times, and they didn't war game treating the pandemic. They war gamed pivoting social media to help pivot democracies to be totalitarian, essentially.
I was interested and pleased to see that Jacinda's podium of truth was at least discussed by Tony Blakely, the guy in charge, as something that really damaged trust, because the other countries have really whitewashed their reports. And I think we won't get exactly what we want, but the fact that they have criticised Jacinda, even in the most kind of gentle terms, is a positive, because that totalitarian bent that she introduced via her 1PMs and her messaging that all other sources of information were essentially dis or misinformation, I think that's significant, because a lot of the issues we have stem from that approach, and from the idea that even questioning, you know, governments are made up of people. People are flawed. So any approach that they take is not going to be perfect. And so the fact that we were not allowed to question or critique measures without you know, social backlash or even government.
Granny killer or some other. Mm. What did you, Rachel, have you been filled with anger reading this stuff?
Oh, yes. I was up till five this morning reading the whole thing. Yeah, like hell. But I think what's interesting, I see that Tony Blakely was, let's talk about Tony Blakely, because, you know, of course it was a gentle approach to Jacinda Ardern. This is the man that, you know, worked for a research unit that's received millions of dollars of funding from the Gates Foundation. He was, and it was also funded by Moderna. He also advised Daniel Andrews, the Victoria Premier, to consider getting the army in to enforce a hard lockdown. Longtime friends with Helen Clark. I mean, that doesn't prove anything, but what it does show you is that they didn't want him around for phase two, and this government, I should say, and that's probably a very good thing, considering the section on vaccines where was not huge in this section, in this part, but in part two, it'll be big and he won't be there, which is good. But he just thinks the vaccines were, you know, pretty much perfect. I don't like the man. I don't think he should ever have been appointed, but that's beside the point. You know, the best critique I probably read about the whole thing was Chantelle Baker actually put out a tweet, and I'll just read it to you. I've read the Royal Commission phase one, and here is a summary. The response was our response was fabulous. We don't need to care about people having individual autonomy on what goes into their body. We just need a greater focus on more government overreach for the next pandemic. Oh, and the Parliament protesters were unsure why they were there, but had to be shut down by force because one protester tested positive for COVID, and the poor police got hurt assaulting the protesters. So it was all justified, nothing to concern yourself with. What a relief. All hail Ardern. And I thought, actually, that's probably the best media response so far.
Yeah, that sums it up. I listened to a really good interview Paul Brennan did with Dr. David Bell, who's the former WHO scientist. And one of the things he said that really struck me was all of these claims that the Podium of Truth was making about, you know, how it'll stop transmission were not made by Pfizer. They were just kind of made to PR it. So there are things like
that. Which actually makes it more sinister, really, because, you know, in terms of our governance and autonomy down in New Zealand, Pfizer is a company that, sure, it impacts us, but if it's our government is making stuff up to misrepresent a medication or a vaccine, that's really concerning.
Well, Dr. Angus Dalgleish, I mean, and this is the jarring thing between consuming media and having access to something like to X, for example. You know, you can watch Professor Angus Dalgleish, who's a leading cancer researcher, who's just seen turbo cancers taking off and is really alarmed with it. And, you know, it's very, very learned about the science as well. And says, so, you know, there are six cleavage sites on this. You might get one accidentally. It's a man-made. It's an engineered virus. And he referred to the to COVID as the crime of the century. So it's quite jarring to read these, you know, as you say, softly, oh, well, you know, well, we didn't know at the time. Chris Hipkins has been peddling that one. Oh, you know, like now from in hindsight, you might think a certain thing, but at the time, you know.
It's actually quite a good imitation.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. I'm just sick of playing the government game of paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to the wrong people to critique something this important. And, you know, sometimes it's just, this is the reason we're all turned off government. You know, it's just, everything's just so, it's, we're getting told, well, the media, this is why we're here discussing the media, because we, the media is not telling us the truth about mostly everything, and the government uses that. So, I'm not saying it's blanket, but I just don't trust the processes anymore. And I guess that's what's happened to people. And this is where it's led, unfortunately.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is it's, there are certain percentage of humans who aren't so vulnerable to the brainwashing, and we were framed
disagreeable.
Being, we were framed as being the problem, and so while we get it, there's a bit of catch up being played, and those are the people who are still consuming mainstream media. I do it because I have to talk about it, but frankly, I'm looking forward to Christmas and just. Really not being at all well-informed conventionally. This feeds into that idea of continuing to manage the message. Candace Owens has been denied entry into New Zealand. It's another one from the has anything really changed file. New Zealand has followed Australia in banning Candace Owens from entering New Zealand. Rachel, were you going to go along and see her?
No, I wasn't. I don't particularly take the woman. I certainly think she is probably terribly anti-Semitic. But free speech being free speech, she should be allowed to be here. She should be allowed to have people go and see her. Again, it's interesting. We're getting to the – you think you're getting to the end times when the tail's twisting all around and you're saying things like, you know, well, I don't like her either and I don't think she's necessarily great for social cohesion. But having said that, so many things aren't. So what's worse is when you don't let, and Annie knows all about this, when you don't let people speak and say what you think, and we have the right to think she's bloody stupid. So I'm very pleased to see the Free Speech Union backing her coming, and she should be allowed. And, yeah, we're just getting further down the rabbit hole of censorship, aren't we? So I'll let Annie go on this because she's on the Free Speech Union.
Yeah, we are pushing back on this. As you say, look, I'm not a fan, but I take the same position as you that we can't have government officials, because that's what this is. It's actually not been a call by the minister. This has been decided by Immigration New Zealand officials. So they are suddenly the arbiters of what is true and good in New Zealand and what we should be allowed to hear and engage with. And that's wrong. And, you know, to make the slippery slope argument, you know, okay, it's Candace Owens today, but what if Immigration New Zealand, you know, ends up with an official who is a climate change denier? Will the left be comfortable if he starts blocking environmentalists from entering the country or whatever? You know, these things have a way of embedding themselves, and when power shifts, those tools remain. We are hopeful that the minister or one of the associate ministers will take a look at this, because this government has talked a big game on being more free speech. They have demonstrated that with really emphatically binning some of the kind of hangover policies of the last government. However, they did bring in the gang patch ban, which we opposed, and a lot of people kind of had mixed feelings about that. And as much as I abhor gangs, and I mean, if anyone follows me on X, they'll see I'm very critical of them. It was important for us to take a principled stance on the freedom of expression.
Right, and you were right.
Yeah, and so. I think if we can apply that same thing to Candace Owens, it's just ridiculous, because And the funny thing for me, Rachel, I mean, you know how both of us feel about this, is it actually hasn't been the Jewish community that's been pushing back against her. It's been the bloody Rainbow Mafia. And Rachel and I are reluctantly categorised under that umbrella, but criticised the Rainbow Mafia. And I saw the Young Labour put out a statement saying how happy they were that Candace Owens had been blocked and that it was going to protect gays and lesbians and takatāpui and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, I haven't heard any of her opinions on any of that anyway. But also, I don't give a shit. Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear on this. Yes. But
yeah, go. Say it.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't care what she has to say about homosexuality, for example. Like, I just don't care. Like, why?
I won't caveat my opposition to banning her from the country by saying I'm not a fan of hers. I find her really articulate. Mm-hmm. I think she makes some really interesting points. I heard a very compelling defense of her by, I can't remember who it was, might have been on Tucker Carlson, someone saying she's not anti-Semitic. You know, mm-hmm. she traveled for 18 hours to attend the opening of the American, the moved American embassy in Israel. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there are things you can say about Jewish influence, whether it's in academics or in culture or in finance, and if you're not allowed to say that, it's probably not as healthy as just saying it.
Yeah, kind of, Marty. There's, you know, if you have a bit of a deeper look, there's some things that she said that are beyond.
Obviously,
that,
I haven't listened to everything she said.
Yeah,
so,
she said some horrible things. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But you're right, Marty, that and actually I've got a lot of friends in the Jewish community in New Zealand, and I think, and some of them are on the, I've got a few that are on the board of Free Speech Union, and they would agree that you should be able to have those conversations and speculate and kind of theorise, and equally they should be able to say, well, I think that's nonsense and this is why. And I think that's the important thing here, is that regardless of whether you agree with Candace or not, she has ideas that she's going to put to an audience of people who've chosen to go there. They've paid money to go to this event. And I doubt very much whether any media would give her any platform. So really, all she's going to do is show up, go and do her show, and talk to a small group of people who want to hear what she has to say.
Absolutely. I hear what you're saying too, just going back a bit about Young Labour putting out that statement and, you know, all the lefties that have spent most of the last year or since October 7th being in support of Hamas and Palestine.
Yeah, I find that's incongruous, isn't it?
Yeah, that's incongruous, and I find it appalling that now they suddenly care about the Jews that they've been vilifying for absolutely, you know, months now, over a year now, and wearing their tea towels and running around and destroying local markets with their signs and pissing everybody off. I just give them I have no respect for them. I don't care what they think either. But again, they're allowed to put out their bullshit and pretend that they care, but they don't. So, yeah, interesting. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see whether Erica Stanford stands up to the officials and reverses that decision. But
I see Chris Pink last night, sorry to interrupt, on Twitter saying that he hasn't even been near an application, so he is relooking at it now.
Yeah,
so he was on Twitter saying, no, I have not made this decision. I have not signed off on it. No one's run it past me. I know nothing. I'm going, you know, I'll look at it now. So isn't that interesting? So we've still got the hangover of the woke left hanging around New Zealand immigration, obviously. Well, they're everywhere.
It's the entire public service.
Yes, entire. It's huge to get out, right. Annie, isn't it? It's like unbelievable to get these people, this culture to change. It's going to take more than one term, that's for sure.
Well there's also a fair bit of it in the National Party.
What was that, sorry?
There's a fair bit of woke left in the National Party.
Oh, there
as well.
Is. There is, definitely. And there's a few of them, including the immigration minister, who probably would not be out of place in the Labour Party. But similarly, they're a bit more sensible, I find, and a bit more pragmatic, whereas Labour will make decisions that are ideological despite knowing it's going to alienate a whole portion of their base, as we know from the gender wars. And I think that the challenge this government has is that even their most reasonable or kind of centrist policies, we'll call them, are so hard for them to action because every public service department is so stacked with people who oppose them in general and who want to stymie anything that they do, that they have to fight their own officials to get anything done. Maybe I'm a bit harsh, but I think there should be just, if you are not neutral enough to enact government policy as a public servant, you should be sacked on the spot.
Yep.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the US and how that flows through to New Zealand's appetite for being more realistic about how much public service we can afford.
Yeah.
Let's take a look now at the latest boogeyman for those more government, less freedom folks on the left, the Atlas Network. Now,
yeah. Anyway,
I saw your very entertaining post on X about this. Did you do a little bit of a deep dive into who Atlas are? They sound like good guys.
I mean, I think there will be those who criticize them. You know, people who criticize globalists might not like them because they're kind of the center-right libertarian version of that. However, what they aren't is what the left is portraying them like quite extensively in media and in general. And I know people who have gone to their conferences and have even done some of the leadership courses and stuff that they run. And they are so like benign in terms of politics. Right. They're about the principles of freedom, small government, human dignity, you know, personal responsibility, those kind of libertarian center-right positions that are actually just like obvious. that is what they work to. And so I had a little bit of an understanding about it, which was making me roll my eyes when like I saw the interview with Debbie Naruwa-Packer on May. And she, obviously there'd been a decision, right, we've got to get this Atlas Network mentioned in this interview, but she was like a robotic, I don't know, someone had put her on.
Kamala Harris, Trump, Atlas.
Yeah, she was on repeat. She just kept shoving it into stupid segments. Like it was like, it would be a question, nothing to do with this, and she would drop Atlas in. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to go on Atlas website, I'm going to find the projects that they do, see what I can kind of dig up. And I was open to the fact that I might find things that did support some of the concerns of people like DB, but I didn't. I found things like, you know, they went into Burundi, which is a landlocked country in Africa, because women traders who are quite I guess, common over there, who would their wares and their goods they would take over the borders to neighbouring African countries, they were having to get permits for every single border they were going across and all sorts of other things. And every time they engaged with government or officials, they were getting shaken down, they were getting really corrupt policies, and even the biggest issue on why this project happened was they were getting sexually assaulted by the men who were giving like the permits to them. So Atlas funded a project for locals to reduce the bureaucracy down to one permit that was better policed, and these women then had this permit for 2 years. They didn't have to have these numerous interactions with rapists, basically. And so they were able to do their trading without that kind of violence. And it's the kind of thing that we don't even have to think about in the West.
Unless you're getting shaken down to do some sort of development that might have a tunny fire. Maybe that's what she doesn't like about it.
So it's projects like that. It's like in post-apartheid South Africa, they helped a whole bunch of black South Africans who had been banned from owning any land or property to get title deeds on their homes. And they, I think they've done 15,000 of them. And it's this kind of thing is their norm, is what their bread and butter is. It's going into developing places and helping them solve problems that, you know, are really impacting the quality of life. And this is what I found out when I deep dived on it. And so I did a bit of
The UN, Annie, like the UN, who we trust so deeply now, like the UN. Now we can't even trust the UN.
I mean, if the left is going to trust global institutions like the UN, they don't really have a leg to stand on for other global institutions.
Yeah. It was a real red herring, wasn't it? You know, the treaty stands between, us and these corporate interests that want to come and buy up everything.
Absolutely.
It just seemed like she was trying to make a more, I mean, the Te Pāti Māori's argument, hey, equal citizenship is a terrible thing. Maybe it wasn't polling well.
Well, I don't think it would. And they do. They are constantly pivoting their messages. The thing that their real push for David Seymour is an Atlas puppet, it breaks down when you see that Atlas has an explicit policy of not funding or doing any work with political parties. So the reason they kind of attack him on it is that he attended one of their conferences when he was in opposition years ago. I think it was 2016 or something. So he sat on a panel and he answered questions, just like Jacinda Ardern goes around sitting on all kinds of panels. And so they say that he's in their pocket, but they don't fund political parties. They advance kind of policies. And generally what happens for these projects is that the people on the ground bring an application for a grant, and then Atlas reviews it and goes, yeah, this is in our wheelhouse, this is in our values, okay, we'll give you some funding. So it's not Atlas going around and meddling willy-nilly. They're just a funding program, just like there's heaps on the left where you have an organization that puts together people with money who care about a certain issue or a certain set of values and matches them up with people who need that funding. So it's just, regardless of whether you agree with their work, it is not what the left is saying it is.
Well, the whole interview with Jack Tame was a worst motive fallacy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, if he's got a motivation to do this, it's the worst possible thing we can think of. So,
All I did with the Atlas Network, who I know very little about, but they certainly don't bother. They certainly don't make me feel nervous. I just decided to Google yesterday Atlas and just see the news articles. Well, first one that came up in New Zealand was the PSA wrote an article, and you could argue the PSA would be more damaging than the Atlas Network, but that's another story. And it was called "Understanding Atlas: How a Right-Wing Network is Building Global Influence," and it talks about a useful way of looking at the Atlas Network as a guide to how right-wing interests build and maintain their influence and power. And so it goes on. And so there are just, so yeah, it seems to be the latest, group du jour de hate, but, you know, there are so many that exist now, like the PSA, that you could spend a whole hour talking about their negatives. It's pretty scary.
They do what Atlas doesn't, which is they align with a party, they're aligned with Labour, they donate to Labour.
That's right.
So, you know.
It's just crazy stuff. It's just designed to tear down, it's carrying on from the disinformation project, isn't it? It's carrying on to try and tear down anything on the right as evil and or and I don't even see it as the right, really.
No, they're libertarians. Yeah. They're at pains to say that they are classical liberals or libertarians, and that they're not conservative. Of course, any big organisation is going to have a smattering of conservatives. There's probably a smattering of leftists in there as well. But they are, you know, for example, Debbie Gibbs, who's actually a New Zealander. She's the chair of Atlas Network. She's based in New York. And her mum is Dame Jenny Gibbs. Now, their family has been involved in very liberal philanthropy in New Zealand for decades. She's Dame Jenny Gibbs is a honorary vice president of family planning. So the characterization of them as like this shadowy right-wing family is just wrong. Like,
You know, I saw an interview with Eric Weinstein the other day, and he said something that just really turned a light on in my mind. He said that the reason people keep going back to communism, even though it's demonstrably, measurably such a terrible system, is that capitalism, for all its strengths, hasn't found a way to give a consolation prize to the people who lose in the system. So it's possible, and I've often said, you know, National shouldn't allow Labor to take that we're kind ground.
Totally.
They should be talking about, hey, okay, in the short term, you know, it's kind to let people stay on a benefit, but it's really unkind in the long term. And so
it's really kind to call a man a woman. But it's actually horrible in the long term. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
So I think the left are going to block any rear guard action by the right to remedy that. And I'd say, just from what you've said, Annie, it sounds like the Atlas Network are somewhat about that.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I kind of made the joke in the video that, it's not like they're, you know, feeding the homeless, and then, the next clip is their project feeding the homeless in San Jose. You know, like, it's a lot of it is actually very wealthy people, the funders, who want to do philanthropy, and that's why they get involved in that system. It's not where they're like investing for profit, though I don't know if that is a side effect of it, but a lot of them, it is, you know, a lot of religious Americans are very much wanting to give back. It's part of their ethos. And they just want to go and put some money into a project that does, you know, feed the homeless and afflicted in San Jose. You know, I just can't state enough how bizarre this conspiracy is, because it is not just a bit wrong, it is entirely wrong. And our media has swallowed it whole. You look at Mihi Nārangi Forbes, she made this trick or treaty documentary, and it's just riddled with lies. It's just completely wrong. Radio New Zealand and TVNZ, who are supposed to be our funded, you know, public networks, they are running the talking points that the PSA, for example, that Rachel's, you know, talked about, and they're just, they may as well be getting the information off the morons on X who are wearing tinfoil hats.
Yeah, we could be included in that statement. But, you know, there's quite a few morons on X, which I'm quite proud to be one. But, interesting. Dame Jenny Gibbs, you mentioned. Well, of course, I've lived long enough to remember when she was totally hanging out with Tama Iti, you know, art patron. Remember? And I mean, so she actually does care about very diverse things, and she has lots of money, and I don't think she's a one-trick pony at all. So interesting. But our media just won't look at anything deeper than what they hear from the people they want to hear from.
And the way they want to frame them as well, as you know, there's got to be, as I said, attribution of worst motive fallacy.
Well, the claim that Debbie Nauru Packer made on Q&A was that she was this big donor. And I went back and had a look through the public donations records. And Dame Jenny Gibbs donated $100,000 to the ACT Party in 2022. Now, I thought, I wonder if Te Pāti Māori's had any donations that big. And I just had a look at the years either side, and in 2021, a guy called John Tamahiri donated $158,000 to the Te Pāti Māori. So it's like,
it's only crime on the right side. There's nothing on the left, you know.
Well, let's have a chat about nuclear war.
Yes, lovely.
On to Brighton.
I've been, and this is again that weird feeling you get when you're watching the news and you've got your phone in your hand and you're scrolling through X, and it's just like two different worlds. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been just so frustrated with either the silence on just a very dangerous escalation in Ukraine to include nuclear weapons that comes from that sort of little band of weirdo neocon sort of war hawks who think maybe we just have a little nuclear war, you know, just tactical.
Be fine.
Just a little one.
On Media Matters, it's almost like they say it like homeopathy. You know, you just take something harmful, you just dilute it.
You're a little bit pregnant.
Yeah, you get something good. But I was looking at the Sunday Star Times, and they just sort of printed this story from the Washington Post, and they're just tying themselves in knots to make Russia's retaliation for strikes within Russia by these storm cloud systems that need satellite support from the US and Britain. I mean, before you even get to the what if China's doing that in Mexico kind of thought. But just reading it, by launching a new nuclear capable intermediate range ballistic missile at Ukraine, Russia is threatening Kiev and its Western allies with the aim of stopping Ukrainian strikes with Western supplied weapons on Russian territory or else. It's just.
Yeah, of course Russia is. But, you know, everything Russia's evil, everything Trump is evil, everything Biden is good, and even though he probably didn't have anything to do with this.
This is all him. And what I was astounded by was how little conversation there was about the fact that he seems to have willy-nilly just been like, yeah, sure, just add some nuclear weapons to that. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, was that his advisors? Because let's be honest, he's not really on this planet. Or was it the fact that he's not on this planet and he just went, oh, okay.
Well, they're saying it's Anthony Blinken's in charge and he's got some weird thing with Russia. But, I mean, they're sort of twisting it like, oh, we're giving Ukraine back the nukes that Russia took off them. It's kind of like, I don't know.
Maybe they shouldn't have them. And, I mean, maybe no one should have them.
in a perfect world, Annie, that would be awesome. But
well,
yeah,
they're useful if you don't use them, but the itching to use them is kind of creepy. I mean, I was quoting, and this is a good way to shred one's credibility, but Alex Jones,
was he talking about frogs?
Like the Candace Owens thing. I like it, and he's, you know, you look back at stuff he said, he's off.
Yeah,
on
true,
the
but yeah.
But he was saying it's like, you know, when this sort of drunken, violent psycho sees his wife and kids leaving in the car at 3 a.m. trying to sneak out and shoots at them and then kills himself. It's this kind of there are a whole raft of people in Washington around the world, you know, who don't want the Epstein lists to come out, who, you know, it's possible that the things that they've done which might be brought to light.
P. Diddy, all that. Yeah.
It's not. They're not going to be able to carry on.
No.
P. Diddy's thing's going to wipe out half of Hollywood and the music industry.
Well, I mean, you know, that's something that that people really can't get their heads around, the extent to which blackmail's used to. Because you don't want someone, you know, driving some agenda that's worth billions of dollars to you suddenly getting a conscience. You've got to have a DVD that you can go, be ashamed if this got out. And you know, I remember hearing someone say once that the problem isn't that you can buy a US congressman for $10,000. The problem is that there's a process to eliminate congressmen you can't buy, congressmen and women you
That's
can't
right.
buy.
Yeah.
But, I don't know where the, you know, it's very difficult to find the cubono in nuclear war, isn't it? But
yeah. But if we think it's not going to happen again, I mean, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were only, you know, what,
well,
60, 70 something.
Power of modern nuclear weapons, aren't they?
I realize, yeah, and I get that. But if we think it stops there, I just think I have a very strong feeling in my waters that we're going to see something soon that is not pleasant. I just really, really feel it. And I hope I'm wrong, and I hope Trump can get in there. And I know Putin's not a silly man, and I certainly know that Trump isn't either. He's a deal maker. So, and I think Putin has a sneaking regard for him and vice versa. And I want my world leaders to actually talk to each other, even if they're madmen, even if, you know, what he did in North Korea and what he did with the Abraham Accords. And, you know, people don't realize that Trump can change things. And I think, yeah, they're throwing their toys, the Democrats, and this is part of it, before he gets in there and make as much trouble as possible.
It would be interesting, like, if he had won last, or this term, it's not last term yet.
Yeah.
I wonder what would have happened with the Abraham Accords, and if that would have prevented or changed what happened in Israel October 7th and subsequently, because he was on, he'd done a lot of work on peace there, and they just
got have gotten out. Nobel Peace Prize, really.
Obama got one.
Yeah.
You got a preemptive
one. The president who's killed more people than any other president. Yeah.
But,
know?
I mean, similarly, in that kind of hypocritical vein, how about, like, every headline about how Jacinda Ardern has got a special prize for unity and peace, I think, and a special damehood, even though she's supposed to be a Republican, so I don't know why she got the special damehood. And that she's brought peace and unity. Well, I'm sorry, if you read this whitewash, or I guess softly report on COVID, you can see she did not bring peace and unity to New Zealand. And a good chunk of us who perhaps aren't the ones being, you know, platformed on the mainstream media would
the disagreeable
say,
ones, you mean, Annie?
The what?
The disagreeable ones.
The disagreeable ones, yeah. You know, we would say she has harmed our social cohesion. She has destroyed our unity, and she's getting bloody awards for it.
Yeah.
The thing that cracks me up about, or doesn't crack me up, it astonishes me that it's the threads aren't pulled together on Jacinda Ardern, is how she's gone straight to the academic epicenter of the misinformation project, you know, that will to censor information that doesn't suit well, the World Economic Forum, really, for one. And I mean, it's interesting. Australia's just narrowly missed out on being a world leader in that space with their disinformation bill. This is from Reclaim the Net. Australia has abandoned a draconian plan to impose hefty fines on social media companies that fail to curb the dissemination of misinformation online. The government had proposed penalties of up to 5% on global revenue for these platforms, but faced insurmountable opposition, which I think about 7 crossbench MPs, that made it clear the legislation would not pass through the Senate. Is that something to breathe a sigh of relief about?
Well, I think it is. That would have been an appalling piece of legislation, and I think it had the potential to be weaponized quite badly. However, I feel like every time we have these little wins in terms of we, those who want freedom, there are another several pop their heads up. You know, I actually agree to an extent with their social media ban on under 16s that the Albanese's government has just pushed through, because I'll recommend to everyone to go and read Jonathan Haidt. It's just the impact on mental health of young teenagers is huge. However, is also, as these governments do, being used as a vehicle to bring in, like, digital ID and other measures of control, which I don't agree with. So that's just passed, I think, yesterday. Then similarly, it pops up in the UK that this absolute, I probably can't say the words that I want to call him, this Labour MP in the UK, who in Parliament has asked the Prime Minister to make blasphemy laws, bring them back, but only for Abrahamic religions, so Islam, because of Islamophobia. And I've been so pleased to see, if you go and see his statements on X and virtually anywhere that the media has printed it, everyone is like, get absolutely effed, not in our country. So it feels like we get a win here and then there's another assault on freedom of speech, you know, stuff somewhere else.
I compare it to being in a bar fight. You know, if you, someone takes a swing at you and you manage to duck out of it, you don't want to be patting yourself on the back too long.
No. Another one's coming.
You know,
I agree with you, Annie, on the Jonathan Haidt thing. I've read it back to front, and I totally get it. And I do believe that it's ruining children, and it's a real problem. And but I also think that, it's a once over lightly. It's like the gang patch thing. Mm. It plays well when Albanese says, "Oh, I just want them to go out into the footy fields and play sport after school." And it sounds
like, that'd be nice.
Wouldn't that be nice? He doesn't give a shit.
Well, it's like the environment, you know, everyone, we should have an environment that's thriving and healthy and not polluted, but it doesn't necessarily follow that we should borrow $70 billion and send it to corrupt nuclear-armed countries via corrupt carbon markets.
It doesn't make sense that that people like us should be forced to use the absolute horror and oppression that is paper straws. They are my absolute bugbear. I hate the things. Give me a plastic straw. But, you know, like all of these policies that affect everyday people and make life so much more expensive, only for our big champion of the environment, who's not even government, Chloe Swarbrick, to swan over on a plane to COP29 and
Drink
Carver. You know, that was the extent of her contribution. And I'd love a critical journalist to go, right, what is Chloe in her lifestyle and in her, her as an MP, what is she doing to contribute to this fight against climate change? Oh, hang on, she's flying all over the place constantly, multiple flights a week. She doesn't own a car, but she has Ubers and takes taxis and that kind of thing. She's not busing. And it's just this lack of critical lens on popular in the media MPs.
Yeah. Like when they banned plastic bags, you know, an OIA request that I never quite got around to making but should have is, on any of your trips to various conferences, did any members of the Labour Party ask any of the leaders or representatives of the top four countries for backing dump trucks up to rivers and dumping rubbish in them to stop? And if they didn't, what is it really, you know, what am I really doing standing there on the footpath with the arse falling out of my paper bag, with all my groceries wrapped in plastic rolling around on the footpath?
Well, if we take plastic bags and paper straws or plastic straws.
I've got those forever chemicals in them as well, those paper straws, and they've got a lot of...
They've got glue and whatnot on the inside.
And stuff like that in them.
Yeah, and... I can go on rants about paper straws for quite some time. I won't do that to you, but I will say that if we brought them back, it would make absolutely no difference to the global
New Zealand turtle population.
We are absolute, like, minuscule, not even a pimple on the ass of the world. We're tinier than that, you know?
Annie, I think you're Annie, I'm sorry, but I think you're making a straw woman argument here.
Look, don't take this argument away from me. I especially when I've had a few and I'm drinking.
In a bar, just like, what the?
Remind me never to have a few with you. We'll have more than a few, I think.
We don't have straws.
When we have these conversations, I just want to press reset on the world because it's like everything is just like a spiraling downward snake eating itself, and it's, you just want to press the bloody restart button, don't you? This is how it feels. Like Eddie says, everything popping up all the time. There's another one coming.
The difference between people who are sort of healthy in that sense and people who want to be ostentatious is that, you know, if you get that feeling, you can just sort of reset to, well, what am I doing in my life?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, if you see the houses and gardens of a lot of these people, as you say, you know, their lifestyle doesn't necessarily speak to their ostentatious concern.
Yeah. Right.
I think you're absolutely right. And I've definitely in the last, you know, as I've reached the ripe old age of 33 and turning 34 next month, I've definitely reassessed some of the stuff about, like, I can be angry about a lot of the stuff in the world. The media certainly makes me angry on a regular basis, as people can see on my Twitter account. But what is it in my own life that I can control that makes it a better experience for me and those I love, and kind of screw anyone else? And I think we'd all be better if we just focused inwards to our immediate family and, you know, looked after ourselves.
Well, one side effect and benefit of nuclear war is, if it happens, that's what we'll be doing.
Oh, I love the glasses half full attitude of yours, Rachel. Come on, carry
real
on.
Optimism
on
for nuclear war.
Good thing about nuclear war.
Could, you know, like fun. My grandmother used to say, we just need a bloody good old-fashioned war to sort these young people out. And I used to think, you silly old tart. But you know what? She probably had a point.
I know. That's, yeah. That's what used to happen back in the day. It would clean everyone out. They'd have a pandemic and there was no lockdowns when the Black Plague showed up.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, this has got very morbid.
I know. It's fun, though. Well, it's fun.
We're up against time. We're going to talk about the spin-off and their Terry statement.
We'll just give it one word, yeah, or two words. F off.
I saw your post on X about that, saying that the open letter was a bit like an open relationship. It was a bit icky.
Yeah, begging. They were just begging for money. They want the government. They were, you know, Duncan Greaves, old mates with Jacinda, and he got lots of money. And they just want that back, don't they?
They got disproportionate amount of money from the government for such a small thing. You think about like the little blogs and some really good things. You know, David Farah does a great job with his blog. Has he had any government funding? No. I hope he's not going to correct me on that, but I'm going to assume that. And it's like, it's actually a left-wing blog and it's got increasingly extremist. And I just, I found it hilarious because they mentioned specifically Alice Sneddon's bad news and how it hadn't been refunded. And as someone who was the subject of one of the episodes via the women's rights stuff that I do, I have to say I'm absolutely thrilled it's not getting funded anymore because she's a nasty bully who made fun of a bunch of women who were standing up for women's rights. So
absolutely, Annie, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
They can go to hell, the spin-off, as far as I'm concerned. They're horrible.
Try and find other jobs.
I always think about TVNZ getting a $24 million funding increase. And I think about what RCR's done, you know, for 2 years. And I don't know, you know, what money it's taken to do that, but it's probably less than 10% of RNZ's funding increase.
But you guys aren't going on junkets to Hollywood and Venice and like.
Don't need more time, eh?
Not yet, but we might.
You've put your name down for it.
What's interesting is RCR, you get people like us, Annie, you get the top commentators in the country talking about really brilliant things. And I'm sorry, no money pays for that. It's priceless.
I know, but I have to say, I think some people would disagree with that assessment.
And I don't care.
Well, it's interesting because the just sort of skipping over the U.S. election in 2016 was regarded that Trump won that on Twitter, and X, as it is now, has been a major factor again because they're the one large social media outlet that's resisted that misinformation stick.
Interesting. Apparently, Zuckerberg has gone for a visit to Mar-a-Lago. So I wonder if he groveled on his knees and said,
he did.
You know?
Yeah, he very publicly lamented that they'd given in to government pressure to censor factual information during COVID. Do you reckon, how do you think that that's going to impact New Zealand's media landscape? Are we going to see normies sort of tuning into alternative media, do you think? Because that's the big barrier for RCR. A lot of people who listen to us are the kind of people who kind of know what's going on anyway, and you can hear people who've got opinions on RCR have never listened to it.
I mean, I do think that there's obviously growth in the alternative media space with you guys and with more informal sources on social media. I think that the mainstream media will kill itself before everyone deserts it, and they'll do that via their funding decisions. Like the Herald now, with having freaked out about the Hobson's Pledge front page ad, are basically stifling the ability for advocacy groups they don't agree with to buy advertising. Well, we're told the media's got no bloody money, and now they're going to turn away money if they don't like the politics of the ads. I mean, I think that they will commit suicide and that they will bunker down on their ideologies and they will kill their income streams.
Well, the red pill moment, I mean, that I've had with the media is that the consumers of it aren't the customer. And once once you understand that, everything becomes clear. The customers are the people who print the money, who own the private equity companies that own the corporations that do most of the advertising.
We'd all love to know what money's backing stuff, because it wasn't the $1 that Sinead bloody put up.
Yeah. No,
wouldn't we? Yeah. No, they're about to die, and I think I can't wait, and I think that people are going to come over in droves. I'm very positive about RCR and other because we're here. That's all I got to say.
No. And I support my journalism habit through cleaning carpets, making olive oil, and having another job.
Absolutely. And Annie, have you been on RCR before? I don't know if you have you?
I've been on with I've been on Paul Brennan's one
political panel.
Times. Yeah.
Great. Well, it's really good to see you on here because I think, you know, you're young and you're the face of the future, and you're a great commentator, and it's been fun being on with you. I really enjoyed
you're brave
it.
Brave too, Annie. That's what I like about you. And I wonder how you weather the storm sometimes, because you're quite an open person, and that's kind of catnip to the really nasty people who you would have been up against in some of your women's rights work. How do you keep yourself from...
I really didn't initially. I mean, I've been doing this women's rights stuff for more than a decade, and initially I had some real dark moments with the bullying and that kind of thing. And I really just made the decision that if I wanted to continue to be a voice to these issues that I tend to talk about, I couldn't kill myself in the process. Yeah. And so I had to find a way to do that without buying into the shit. And so I had a policy initially of not blocking anyone, because I thought, if you want to listen to me, you want to listen to me.
But I could have told you that one.
I
changed it years ago. Yep. Mm.
And so I just block people who are abusive. So it's funny, I get a lot of messages saying, are you okay? Like, don't listen to them. And I'm going, who am I listening to? Because I've got them blocked and I haven't seen it. But
It's a bit of a reframe, isn't it? It's a bit like when you first started going into supermarkets without wearing a mask. Initially, you're all shy. And then after a while, you're looking at the angry eyes peering over a mask and you just go, you're the problem. Just to jab my finger at a few.
Just needed to toughen up, Annie, and you've toughened up.
I mean, like, my early 20s to start with. I mean, that's the funny thing is, like, a lot of people who have followed me have known me since I was like 20, 21. And so they've kind of seen, I guess, that change to how I deal with things. So I used to have a lot of cries about mean people, but
it's something, Rachel, I just can't understand. You know, the 90s, so much fun, so little proof.
Yes, that's right.
I think we're up against time now. So, hey, I just wanted to thank you both again for coming on. Thanks, Annie. Rachel, always good to have you on too.
Yeah, thanks, Marty.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's good. Always fun. Well, thanks very much. Have a great weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.
Yeah.
You
all
too.
Right, see you later.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.